The Guardian.
This is Politics Weekly. I'm Rowena Mason. At Labour's annual conference, Jeremy Corbyn says Labour is ready for power and is now the party of the mainstream.
The Labour campaign machine is primed and ready to roll.
We'll look back at a week in Brighton of ideas and optimism with our political panel. We'll analyse the leader's speech, all 75 minutes of it, get reaction from party members, and hear from the shadow Foreign Secretary Emily Thornberry.
People really feel, they can feel we're about to touch power, and everyone is very optimistic about it.
We offered an antidote to apathy and despair, to misery and depression. Let everyone understand this. We've come this journey not to let you down, because we listen to you, because we believe in you. Labour can, and Labour will, deliver a Britain for the many, not the few.
So Jeremy Corbyn has rounded off a pretty successful conference. The last two have come directly after fraught leadership contests. But he sends his party delegates home with a growing sense of unity.
Absolutely brilliant, inspiring. Obviously, just backing up the incredible manifesto from the election. He's got a really strong stance on Labour's future foreign policy, and you could see from the standing ovation, I think that was the quickest standing ovation I saw. There were many in the room, but I think that was probably had the quickest positive response, yeah.
Everybody's been talking about it, saying, you know, how different it is this year and how hopeful and unified everyone feels, and across the board, you know, and just from the Parliamentary Labour Party to the membership, the delegates, you know, the trade unions, all of that, it just feels like we are, like Corbyn was saying, you know, a government in waiting, and it's amazing.
I thought it was an amazing atmosphere. I mean, the whole week or the whole couple of days we've been here, it's been a really buzzing atmosphere around, and it's kind of really inspired me to go back to my community in Portsmouth and get out there and get campaigning. We spent the first couple of days completely confused about what was going on, to be fair. It wasn't the most accessible thing, and it probably could have been explained a bit better. There were things that we wanted to get up and say, but we didn't really get the opportunity to do so. So hopefully next time we'll kind of continue to come and get more involved as we know what's going on. In all our delegation are all new members in the last couple of years. In Portsmouth, where we're from, the membership of the local party has gone from around 400 to over 2,000. So it's more than quadruple, kind of times five in that time. And new members kind of really been inspired really by Corbyn's leadership and are really eager to get involved and get out there campaigning.
Well, now I am joined by our political editor, Anoushka Astana, who was in the hall. Anoushka, what did you make of it?
Well, I thought this was Jeremy Corbyn, the left-wing politician who has for decades fought against neoliberal economics, essentially laying out his stall and making very clear that he believes that economic model is dead and that his politics is now the centre ground. And trying to make this argument that essentially the public is there on issues such as rent control and mass nationalisations, but the establishment pundits, I guess that's people like us, apparently we're not there. We think that the centre ground is somewhere else, and we have had to be dragged kicking and screaming to understand why it is that Corbyn is popular. I mean, I'm being a bit harsh. Hopefully he wasn't actually talking about us when he said that. In fact, he had a pop at another newspaper, the Daily Mail, and it was quite a strong pop. I think we can listen to it.
They ran the campaign they always do, under orders from their tax exile owners to trash Labour at every turn. The day before the election, I remember it well, I was on trains all day long doing six rallies. One paper devoted 14 pages to attacking the Labour Party. And the following day, our vote went up nearly 10%.
What about new policies, Anoushka? Was it mostly sort of top-line vision, or was there any new detail on what Jeremy Corbyn would actually like to do in government?
Well, I mean, I came out of the speech and said, pretty light on policy, although as you responded to me at the time, maybe I was being a little unfair, seeing as they have just published a massive manifesto that is full of policy. There were a few new things in there. So number one, on rent controls. In the manifesto, they suggested that there could be a limit on increases to rents. Here they seem to be going further, saying they'd like cities to be given the ability to control rents, and they'll be looking at models around the world. Also, post-Grenfell, they believe that we really need to look at regeneration and essentially saying councils would have to ballot local residents before they would be allowed to redevelop sites, and that people would be guaranteed to stay in those sites. They also promised to change organ donation law, and a little bit of a threat of fines if companies don't go ahead with equality audits. But really, that was it in terms of new stuff.
What about Jeremy Corbyn's style? Did he sound like a man that's ready to move into Downing Street?
I just think the whole thing's so funny. You know, here he comes. They're chanting, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." They've got like red scarves above their heads. You know, we've been listening to a bit of rave music on the way up. And then out comes a sort of 67-year-old man with a, you know, with a grey beard who wants to talk about inequality. I mean, how the world has changed. I think he's absolutely reveling in it. That moment at the beginning where he said, you know, that it was really infectious and he'd like to infect the whole country with it. I mean, it was quite an exciting moment, but also almost quite vain to say, "I want the whole country chanting, oh, Jeremy Corbyn." But I guess if you want to be Prime Minister, you have to say that. And it's very clear that they are rubbing their hands with glee as the Tories battle it out over Brexit. And we've had this recent debacle with Boris Johnson and Theresa May, which gives an opportunity for Jeremy Corbyn to look prime ministerial.
And how do you think it compares with his previous performance at last year's conference, the one before? Has he professionalised at all? Does he sound like one of those professional politicians that he professes to despise these days?
Well, I think he speaks more slowly, that's for sure, because even though the speech wasn't that much longer than last year, it was 75 minutes. And I heard people joking afterwards that maybe it could have been half an hour shorter, but it was a more professional delivery. I think he waited more, he paused more to get the response. There were things that came off script and were quite natural. I mean, the crowd was rapturous because they love him, but I don't think there were quite as many standing ovations as he might have hoped for. Perhaps next year he'll come in with even more.
What about the voters? How does this translate from the conference hall to the living room?
Well, I mean, some people say we've got to have a bit of caution here, that although, you know, they did do much better than expected in the election, they clearly didn't win. Labour just ahead in the polls at the moment. But when it looks at who do you think is the better Prime Minister, Theresa May still well ahead of them. So I think there is work to do. It is translating to some extent. We saw that in the election. But clearly, you know, the Tories aren't going to run such a bad campaign in the future. There is a lot to do to break through. And one of the real negatives of the speech is there has been a fairly unanimous negative response from business, who said, "We can't believe you didn't say a good word about us." And business doesn't like mass state intervention.
And what are the odds, do you think, that Jeremy Corbyn will actually be in number 10 Downing Street by this time of conference next year?
By next year, you must be joking. One Tory MP said to me, "The one thing that our party is absolutely united on is that we do not want a general election." Ideally, they said, not for 8 years. They can't have that, but they can hold off till 2022. I think very little chance that they'll be going anytime soon.
Anushka Astana there. Well, if Labour is heading for power, its Foreign Secretary will be Emily Thornberry, an ally and constituency neighbour of Jeremy Corbyn. Our other political editor, Heather Stewart, sat down with her.
Emily, how's Brighton been for you? How's your conference?
Oh, I've had a really good time. I've enjoyed it so much. You compare it to last year, that was really quite tense. This is just... I keep meeting new delegates. The one moment that I've had lots of people come up and talk to me, and it's really good, but I think the one I will remember is these two young women, like sort of tiggers, you know, come bouncing up the road to me, and they're going, "We're Emily's and we're from Southampton, can we have our photo taken with you?" It's just lovely. And people talking about how, you know, they've been to this meeting and that meeting, and bouncing with ideas, and it's how conference ought to be.
Now, there was a bit of a frisson, wasn't there, earlier in the week about the idea of Brexit, and should Brexit have been discussed more or voted on more on the conference floor, and was the leadership trying to sort of shut down debate about this rather sort of fraught issue?
Well, I mean, so for people not involved in conference, what happens is that constituency parties can send motions to Parliament that they think are particularly urgent, and so long as they're deemed to be urgent, they then are put before delegates, and delegates then vote on which of those motions they want to debate and vote on. And there was one on Brexit, and the delegates decided not to vote on that. And I think they prioritise housing and the National Health Service and, you know, other issues. Frankly, it's up to delegates to decide what it is they want to vote on. It's disingenuous to say that we didn't have a debate on Brexit, because we certainly did. Yesterday morning, we had a variety of different views expressed very passionately on the conference floor during the international and Brexit debate that happened Monday morning.
And plenty of fringe meetings at which people have been putting those different views across.
Sure.
To...
Sure. I mean, to say that Brexit isn't being debated at this conference is really not true.
Labour lost in June, but there's a real feeling that you sort of won, isn't there? Is there an election coming soon, and are you ready? Is that the feeling here?
I mean, I kind of put it slightly differently. I say that we didn't win, but we certainly didn't lose. And if anybody lost, it was Theresa May. I appreciate that they're technically in government, but only just. And they are having all sorts of problems. And we are going from strength to strength. And there is a positiveness, there's an optimism, people really feel, they can feel we're about to touch power, and everyone is very optimistic about it.
Emily Thornbury there. Well, I am now joined on this last day of conference by Guardian columnist Raphael Baer, Guardian sketch writer John Crace, and Beth Foster-Ogg of Momentum. Beth, starting with you, what have you made of the mood this year?
It's been absolutely amazing. Such an incredible energy, not only in the conference, but also in the fringe events going on. There's been so much participation and kind of like people just really excited to be here. And walking past those of first-time delegates who are just like, woo, getting all excited about rule changes and financial reports is odd but beautiful. It's definitely been better than previous conferences, which have had more of a, there's been lots of stressful times in the last couple of years for the Labour Party, but this has been really positive and really, bouncing off the manifesto, presenting a positive vision.
Any negatives at all? I know there's been a bit of anxiety amongst some Labour MPs about the lack of in-depth debate on Brexit.
I think there was a really good talk about Brexit on Monday morning. We had Keir's brilliant speech and comments from the floor afterwards, and lots of fringe events, and it's definitely run through the whole theme of conference. So even when we're talking about social care or something else, Brexit's been a key issue. So I think it really has been debated thoroughly.
Let me come now to Raphael Baer. He's a Guardian columnist. What have your impressions been of this year compared to previous years? I know you're a veteran of many conferences.
I think Beth's absolutely right that the atmosphere, that there is a sense of the party being comfortable in its own skin in a way that it obviously hasn't for the last couple of years. And partly that's essentially because the leadership has now, because the election result seemed to, well, did refute so much of the criticism that was levelled against the leadership. So even if Jeremy Corbyn isn't prime minister, he's clearly internally within the party won a mandate to stamp his authority on it. And the people who last year and the year before were, degrees of hostile up to profoundly hostile to leadership, they don't really have a strategy or a message to compete with that, and so they've been very quiet. I was thinking back to one time Labour were in Brighton 4 years ago, and Ed Miliband was the leader, and in a pre-conference rally, someone shouted out from the crowd, said, well, when are you going to bring back socialism? And Ed sort of hesitated for a second, said, that's what we're doing, sir. And it was news. The Telegraph wrote this up as, God, blimey, Ed Miliband's actually going to bring back socialism. It wouldn't be news now that the Labour Party is a socialist party, and I think a lot of the delegates and a lot of the members feel that as a tremendous liberation to be able to say, well, we've always sort of thought we were a socialist party, and what was this weird thing that we weren't allowed to say it, and now we are. So that has transformed the atmosphere. On the Brexit thing, look, I think actually there's been a lot of sort of disingenuous criticism from the Remainers, and I'm a very ardent Remainer, about this. Look, that's how conference works. The leadership didn't want to have a substantive motion debate on Brexit because there isn't a clear position. And under Tony Blair, if there had been a massive issue on which there wasn't a clear position, they would have worked very hard to stitch up conference so that it didn't expose it too hard. And ultimately, a lot of even, I think, Jeremy Corbyn's supporters will have a clearer position or want to express it much more clearly when Jeremy and John have decided what the position is. So, would I like the Labour Party to have taken a more robust stance in support of the single market or a softer Brexit or EEA? Yes. Do I think it's reasonable to expect the Labour leadership to sort of air all their dirty laundry as much in public as they possibly can on the first day of the conference. No, that's not how party conferences work. And one of the strengths of the Corbyn movement and its control of the machine is that, you know, as Beth sort of implied, it's just got much better at gaming the machinery of the Labour Party to get the outcomes that it wanted in the way that Labour leaderships have always kind of done.
And what about this slightly dark cloud of allegations of anti-Semitism that have been a bit of an undercurrent at this conference? I mean, I know the leadership supported a motion to try and express its support for those trying to tackle anti-Semitism, but there was this one fringe event where not a Labour Party member, but he was a panellist, said something about the Holocaust, and that sort of brought all these tensions out into the open again. Do you think that... How do you think the leadership's done at keeping a lid on that and dealing with it properly?
Well, look, structurally, you can say that by supporting the motion, you know, action has been taken. In the last few weeks and months, people have been expelled from the party for expressing and sharing material that's really very obviously anti-Semitic. There is still ultimately a sort of a tonal problem, and personally I find it's very dispiriting that... Rather than engaging with the question, starting from the premise, well, clearly there is a, albeit a very small minority, but there are people who have found in the Labour Party a sort of a safe space to legitimately express things, you know, up to, and it turns out, including Holocaust denial, that really just shouldn't have any place in the party at all. That's not a very difficult thing, obviously, to condemn outright. And yet, whenever that surfaces and whenever someone says, well, look, OK, so maybe the swelling has gone down, or the sort of the boil isn't festering and suppurating as much as it was a few months ago, we still need to treat it. Instead, very quickly, you get this reaction that says, well, you know, this is kind of Zionists and Jews complaining about anti-Semitism, and it's not a real thing and it's not a real problem. Now, there's no other minority group in the Labour family or anywhere else whose entitlement to decide what is and isn't prejudice against them is overruled in the Labour Party by people who aren't in that group. And I think that's the sensitivity and the sensibility of a lot of Jewish Labour supporters that is hardest to swallow.
John Crace, you're our sketch writer at The Guardian. Can you give us the best jokes from conference?
They've actually been quite thin on the ground, because it's sort of the theme of the conference, as both Beth and Rafa said, has been a sort of unity and an energy. And in a way, that kind of sucks out the humour from the conference. The whole idea of a sort of a successful conference is to keep the jokes at a sort of bare minimum. I mean, I think the sort of the closest we got to a joke, which in a way wasn't even a joke, was Len McCluskey saying that we won the general election. Because, you know, in a way, he did. I mean, and the left did win the general election, because if, as expected, or as most people expected, the Tories had increased their majority, then it's almost certain that Corbyn wouldn't be here as leader. But he is, and he is thoroughly established. And, I mean, he is looking more and more credible. And in a way, what's one of the sort of strangest things about him is that he is becoming a sort of professional politician, and which is a sort of odd kind of dichotomy for a sketch writer, because one of the things that attracted so many people to him was the fact that he wasn't a professional class politician, that he was a person who said what he thought. But now, when you see him do the media rounds, he's got much better at not committing himself to sort of positions that are going to be exposed by the Telegraph or the Daily Mail as some kind of mad trot thing. You know, and as Raf was saying, you know, on Brexit, they have been very careful to kind of close down. They haven't got a unified position, and they don't want to wash their dirty linen in public. And on Sunday, on the Mar show, I think Corbyn managed to say nothing for about 20 minutes. He was asked five times, and he was very just calm, and he didn't get agitated. He was just sort of brilliant at it.
So basically, conference has been too happy for it to be very funny.
Yeah, that's yeah. I mean, sketch writers don't like happiness. We like discontent, which is why I'm much more looking forward to the Tory party conference.
What about Emily Thornberry's joke about Boris denying the paternity of Brexit, though, saying he didn't like paternity tests? that was quite funny.
That was, to be honest, the best sort of scripted gag of the whole conference. But I thought, I mean, one of the sort of again, the unintentional gags have been the way that sort of all the sort of Labour Party sort of speakers, you know, the shadow cabinet, have to, there's an obligatory 4 minutes of eulogy to Jeremy before they're allowed to get into what they're actually doing. And sort of Emily Thornberry, you know, in her speech on, before she got into Britain selling arms to Saudi and stuff like that, there was sort of 4 minutes of Jeremy, you are the best, you are wonderful.
The best of those has been Tom Watson and Sadiq Khan, given that they've not been that.
I know, Sadiq.
Not been so supportive of the dear leader in the past.
Yeah, no, I mean, Sadiq was glorious, really, because, I mean, this time last year, he was basically going around saying, I'm the only person with power in the room. I'm the only elected, you know, Labour person in power. Yeah, and then Tom Watson yesterday was another one, and I poor old Tom, as ever, seems to be sort of copping it in the neck from both the moderates for selling out and from the sort of far left for not being sincere. So I don't know if he'll ever win.
And Raf, now some degree of peace and happiness has broken out in Labour for these few days at least. Where do you think that leaves the party for the next few months and the year ahead? Do you think that tensions, which there are, and there are undoubtedly some tensions still there bubbling under the surface with, especially among MPs, do you think those have gone away, or do you think that Jeremy Corbyn's got a free run at being a leader for the foreseeable future?
Well, the last one's easy to answer. Yes, he does. Predicting politics a year in advance is, I've decided, a mug's game. I'm not even going to try. Next few months, the reality is the Tories are just doing such a good job of, you know, they're setting up this kind of soi lumiere display of uselessness, incompetence, division. And in the shadow of that, Labour have an enormous amount of room to manoeuvre. I mean, ultimately, for both parties, the defining thing that's going to happen in the next 3 months is that the high-speed vehicle of Brexit is going to collide with the brick wall of diplomatic, economic, trade, political reality. There'll be a lot of wreckage, and how that turns out will be challenging for Labour, but it's still going to be more challenging for the government.
And what about those unhappy MPs? Do you think they just need to paint some smiles on their faces and grit their teeth and get on with the job of being the opposition?
Ultimately, until they have a very clear way of articulating both what their alternative left prospectus to Jeremy Corbyn's one is, and filtering that through how would you manage the Brexit process differently, you know, and most of them would support membership of the single market, although that's more complicated. They really don't have a vehicle. And so, yes, that is a dormant volcano, possibly even an extinct one.
And John, what are you most looking forward to sketching in Labour over the next few months?
I'm looking forward to not sketching Labour, actually. I'm looking forward to sketching the Tory car crash over Brexit. Because I think this is a sort of Labour's best chance, really. I think that if Labour were trying to negotiate Brexit, you know, we would be seeing all sorts of flaws, you know, and cracks in the party sort of hierarchy beginning to sort of show through. But because in opposition they don't need to, they're not in the firing line, then it's sort of much easier for them. And so I think the best chance for Labour is to sort of let Tories deal with Brexit, and then for Labour to sort of come in a year or 2 years, whatever it is, and kind of sweep up the mess, and then they won't have to take the can for Brexit.
And Beth, do you think that Labour's line on Brexit can hold for the next few months, this sort of fragile negotiated position that Keir Starmer's hammered out? Do you think all the opposing factions on free movement and the single market and those on the left who actually think that the single market could pose a problem for state aid rules, do you think that all those varying positions in the Labour Party can hold together?
Yeah, I think really it's going to be up to the government, and it will be the opposition responding to that, and as has been said, you know, how they respond is already somewhat of a car crash. And I think that the Labour Party we've seen can unite around being a strong opposition. I think apart from Brexit, which is obviously centre stage, the priorities, as we've seen at conference floor, is internally is continuing the party reform. So it was a massive promise at conference for there to be a party reform review. And I think you can see that Labour members want to hold people to account, and hopefully that will be really constructive and give Labour Party members a lot more power, but also staying on a campaign footing just in general. All the MPs talked about continuing to campaign, looking forward, not just campaigning during election time, especially as we don't know when elections happen anymore. So, yeah, I think there's a variety of priorities for the Labour Party.
Well, that's all we have time for this week. My thanks to Beth Foster-Ogg, John Crace and Raphael Baer. Politics Weekly will be in Manchester next week for the Conservatives Conference. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Rowena Mason. Thanks for listening.